happy to welcome back to The Shilling Show, David Murata. He's the president of Murata Wealth Management, and the topic today is going to be keeping Christmas your own way. David, welcome back to the show.
Thank you so much.
There has obviously been lots and lots going on in the financial world, which I'm sure has kept you busy, but it didn't keep you too busy to think about this very thoughtful column that was published in the newspaper, I believe yesterday, in your normal Monday column in the business section of the Daily Progress. And first of all, let's talk about the concept of America being a nation of consumers and debtors. And you had some interesting numbers. Where have things gone in the past decade?
Yeah, about a decade ago, the total U.S. credit market debt was 250% of our gross domestic product. This year, it hit a high of 300% of our gross domestic product. And most people want to attribute that to the federal deficit. The federal deficit actually went down from 46% of our gross domestic product down to 31%. There's two things that went up. The first is the financial institutions. And so when you put $100 in the bank, they loan $90 back out to other people who put it in their banks who loan 90% of that back out. And so the velocity of money actually increases the money supply, and $100 of loaning can increase the debt by 2.5 times that amount. And what's happened recently is that all of our financial institutions have realized that they're leveraged too high. And they realized that they have to pay off some of that debt or they're going to go out of business. And many of them are going out of business and others are deleveraging. Unfortunately, when they deleverage, they have to sell assets. And so what's been happening is it's like your next door neighbor. You look over and he's got a yard sale and he's got every appliance and couch out on the front lawn. And you can buy his couch for $5. And you think to yourself, well, I own a couch. My couch is only worth $5. I couldn't sell it now if my life depended on it. And that's what's happening with the stock market, is all these financial institutions owned everything that you owned, and they're all selling it at a fire sale. And so the minute the stock price goes up a little bit, another financial institution says, well, this is an opportunity to deleverage. And they'll sell theirs at a fire sale, and they'll push the Dow back down around 8,200 or somewhere around that. And that's the price at which people say, hey, for that price, I'm going to buy my neighbor's plasma TV. I'm going to store it in my basement for a couple of years, and hopefully it'll be worth more later when I can sell it again. And so the markets are being pushed down as our country tries to deleverage from 350% of gross domestic product down more. So financial institutions have been the biggest increase in our leveraging. The second biggest increase is the household debt, and household debt's gone from 66% of gross domestic product up to 100% of gross domestic product, which means if we tried for a year and we worked and ate and spent nothing, we could just barely pay off our own household debt.
Wow. Certainly some changes. Now, let's talk a little bit, just so people have the background, about gross domestic product and why that's what we use for benchmarking.
Yeah, gross domestic product is the price of all goods and services produced in the United States. And so it's a benchmark because although the dollar numbers continue to go up, they continue to go up because of inflation and because our economy continues to go up. But when you look at them in an absolute, in a percentage against the gross domestic product, that's a better measurement, because if you're rich, you can afford to have a little bit higher debt.
So I guess the concern would be if we're looking at consumerism driving the American economy, first of all, is that an appropriate assumption? And second of all, what happens when everybody just scales back and pulls in their anchor?
Yeah, they had some studies showing the wealth effect in the last half of the 1990s. And as people's stock portfolios went up in value, they felt richer. And for every $100 that they felt richer, they spent a dollar of it. So the wealth effect on the way up pushed our gross domestic product and spending. And Americans could pretty much be counted on to shop until they drop. During the holiday season, they say that a Visa card gets swiped 100 times a second.
Wow.
So we're a debtor consumer nation. With the drop in the stock market being so precipitous this fall, the anti-wealth effect is going to come into play. People will feel poorer, and it's natural for everyone to want to cut back this Christmas. They've actually been trimming for the last few Christmases the absolute dollar amount they intend to spend. Whether or not that actually happens or not, I'm not sure, because people always say they have good intentions for cutting back at Christmas, but very few people actually do that. When the push comes to shove and they want to put another present under the tree, they pull out the Visa card and they buy it.
Sure, it's relatively painless to do it that way if you don't think too hard about what you're doing. But what have been the drivers of at least this feeling over the past few years?
The feeling of pulling
back or saying I'm going to spend less, even if
yeah,
they didn't.
It's interesting. I think because of inflation, people are feeling pinched more, and because things are costing more elsewhere, they're scaling back on the celebration at Christmas time. And people have always had good intentions about cutting back, and those good intentions seem to be intensifying as energy prices go up, and then as they don't get the raises they necessarily wanted, and then as food prices cost more, and then as other things take a bigger bite out of their salaries. So the thing about keeping Christmas your own way is it's important to recognize that there has to be a limit on how much you spend at Christmas. And on average, people spend between $800 and $900 just on presents alone. If you add in all the other things around Christmas, it's probably about three times that figure.
Are we talking about food and decorations?
Yeah, food, decoration, travel, extra movie rentals, things like that that they do at Christmas time. So the standard we use for how much you should spend for Christmas is 1% of your total take-home pay.
Okay, so that would be net income as opposed to gross income.
Correct.
Okay.
Right. So, if you take a look at what your income is, if you make $50,000 a year, that would mean limiting your Christmas to about $500. If you look at the way a budget is, and if you make $100,000 a year, then you could spend $1,000. And if that sounds like a small amount, that's because Christmas has gotten way more expensive than it's ever been in terms of what it's been historically.
Well, this is a question for you, and I'm not sure if you have the research handy, but I'd love to know if we looked back maybe a generation or two and adjusted for inflation, how much were people spending for Christmas, back in the 60s and the 70s as opposed to today? Do you know what that number is and how it's changed?
I don't. If you go back to our grandparents' generation, I know it was very small. If you go back to our childhood, I have a feeling it was pretty big, because Christmas really as a commercial enterprise kind of boomed with the baby boom generation. All the men came back from war, they started families, and suddenly family life was the emphasis. So kids growing up in the 50s, 60s, and 70s defined the huge Christmas spending that's sort of become the norm. If you go back a generation earlier and you look at, say, the days when our grandparents and great-grandparents were growing up, Christmas was very, very conservative. And if you got one present, that was a lot.
It's interesting that you should say that, because I remember my grandmother, who is no longer with us and hasn't been for a number of years, but when I was a kid, she would always join us for Christmas. And she was born in Italy and raised in a convent during World War I. And she was always marveling at the bounty that we had in our household. And, we were not a well-to-do family, but we were a solidly middle-class family. And my parents always did treat us with a lot of things at Christmas time. And she was just delighted. But she also knew that there was a danger in that. And she would tell us the story about herself when she was in the convent at Christmas time, and this was a time when there really wasn't anything around, and the present from the nuns in the convent was a single piece of hard candy, and in order to make that candy last, they would put it in water so that they didn't consume it all at once and enjoy it over the course of a few days. And that was Christmas in the convent in Italy for my grandmother. So when we talk about how things have changed, that is a picture that I will never forget. All right, David Marotta is our guest. 977-1070 is the phone number, and we would love to hear from you right after the news. Stand by for more of The Shilling Show. It's 1:34 here on The Shilling Show. 977-1070 is the phone number. We're spending the hour today with David Marotta, the president of Marotta Wealth Management. You can visit him on the internet at eMarotta, that's eMarotta.com, and I suggest you go there. He's got a backlog of all of the interviews that we've done here with him, and I particularly highly recommend, if you didn't hear it, that you would check out the show that we did on Social Security, because there's a lot of people running around talking about Social Security who really have no idea what the facts are. All right, let's see here. We've got a caller on line number one, and let's say hello to Gary. Hey, Gary, welcome to the Shilling Show.
Good afternoon, Rob and David. How's everybody today?
Hey, we're doing well today on Mickey Mouse's birthday, and David's having a hard time hearing you, so let me see what we can do. Did you get it there? Any luck? Okay, go ahead. Go ahead.
Okay, two things. One is, David, in your fine article about Christmas, the money allocated to Christmas, that would include gratuities to people that have provided you good service throughout the year, say the newspaper carrier and stuff like that.
It's difficult to keep that much. It's difficult to keep Christmas contained, and so one of the ways of trying to keep it contained is trying to figure out how's that all going to fit in. And you're right. One way to do it is to say, look, if I'm going to have a newspaper carrier and I want to give them something, that needs to be budgeted for throughout the year and not all come out in one month. So
I like that. Yes. Okay.
Yeah. It's the same way I can remember growing up. I used to get presents for Christmas, but I also used to get clothes for Christmas. And I'm pretty sure my mom spent a significant portion of the clothing budget at Christmas time and bought clothes through the rest of the year. So it's our culture that says Christmas time has to be frivolous stuff, not needs, that has made it much more expensive for families. Because now all of a sudden, if you're going to buy clothes or socks, that's almost a joke gift today. It's not a real gift. When in fact, I don't think I ever went shopping other than getting clothes at Christmas time. So when I was growing up, I can remember getting a lot of useful things. And one of the ways of saving at Christmas time is to buy useful things. And one of the things I'd love to hear from callers is, what gift changed the course of your life? So what gift exposed you to a new interest, or gave you something that was going to be part of what your vocation ended up being, or really had a significant impact on your lives? And I know we buy a lot of sort of frivolous, you know, computer games and stuff for our kids, but what do we buy for our kids that really has an impact on them in a significant way? And I know everyone has a story about something they got that changed the course of their life.
Wow.
Anything come to mind, Gary?
Well, yeah, let me think. First off, Rob, thanks for sharing the story about the grandma. That's really poignant. I like that as a reminder. David, here's what actually helped me a great deal looking back over time. I know there's been several things, but my mother was basically the commissar of culture in the Westmoreland household, and she took her boys, and particularly this young boy, to the museum around Christmas time. And I've always had a great support and regard, particularly for the museums I've attended, and I've still kept up that interest and desire to learn more about art objects and other things that appear in museums.
Yeah, that's the amazing kind of thing that you can do at Christmas time that may end up spending very little money, but it brings real joy, fulfillment, those happy memories that you can keep tucked under your jacket on a cold winter day.
Okay, great. David, quickly, you want to make a prediction on the auto bailout for us?
I'm pretty sure they're going to bail out both Ford and GM, and those stocks will not go under, and those bonds will all get fulfilled. So I can't imagine the current the new administration coming in not bailing them out.
Okay. All right. Thanks for your prediction.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
And the pensions will be protected, and the bad contracts will continue in perpetuity, unfortunately. Gary, thank you for the call. That leaves a line open at 977-1070. So we had a few questions while we're talking about Christmas, and I'd like for you to throw them out to the audience.
Yeah, as I mentioned, I'd love to hear how a Christmas present changed someone's life or changed the course of their life. Also, what does your family do to keep Christmas spending under control? How do you limit that, especially if you have a big extended family or a lot of people you're expected to buy presents for? And then also just what brings real joy and fulfillment at Christmas time? I am a Christmas fanatic. I love Christmas movies. I love the holiday season. I love playing games. I love the whole aspect to it. And sometimes just making a list of the things that you really enjoy over Christmas time, you'll find that 9 out of 10 of them don't require a lot of money to enjoy them. So I'd be interested in hearing from people what they do at Christmas time.
You know, one of the things that we started doing in our family, and this kind of developed over a number of years, and I'm speaking about my own family with my wife and now our kids, although they're not aware of this, is that we stopped opening all of our presents on Christmas. And we took it to a bit of a ridiculous extreme, and I think this was probably about 3 years ago, where we still had one open present in June, and I'm not kidding. Now, part of the reason for that was that our house was under remodeling, and so everything was just on top of everything else, and we just didn't have a lot of time. But we really stopped, and one of the reasons I did that, and I really do believe in delayed gratification. I'm trying to teach this to my son, but I remember getting up ourselves as kids on Christmas morning, and particularly my sister, who didn't believe in delayed gratification, was just tearing through the presents, you know. And so finally my parents instituted this rule that we're opening presents one at a time, and we go around and we watch what everybody else got. And then over the years, since my wife and I have been married, we just kind of had this thing where we'll open a few presents, you know, and then we'll save a little for tomorrow. And it's kind of fun to do it that way, and I think it gets rid of some of that Christmas letdown that kids have. Oh, I open it all. Is that all there is? And then that night they're sad because there's no more presents to open. So we're trying this little experiment within our own family, and it's been meaningful for us over the years.
Yeah, that's a great tradition.
All right. At 1:40 here at News Radio 1070 WINA, 977-1070 is the phone number. If you have comments about a very important gift that you received at some point in your life, or the type of presents you can give to your own kids or have given to your kids to expose them to a new interest or encourage them in some sort of vocation. And I'm still thinking about that one from my own childhood and see if I can come up with a good answer for that after the break. But is there something that you got that comes to mind immediately?
You know, when I was young, maybe about 10 years old or so, I got a telescope. And for the next 5 years, I was up at 3 a.m. pointing the telescope at Jupiter and plotting the moons of Jupiter. It gave me a lifelong love and interest in science fiction and astrophysics. And I started out in college at Stanford intending to be an astrophysics major, and then gradually drifted into electrical engineering from there. But yeah, that was a gift my mom gave me because she knew the kinds of things I was interested in, and really changed the course of my life, if you will, for the next several years and clear into college.
Yeah, those are the things that are important. I you know, if I think back, I'm not even sure it was a Christmas gift or not, but my parents did support me in going to a vocational music school after I had graduated from college, and it allowed me to pursue music, and it really changed my life as far as what I was able to do and what I've been able to do over the years, and has brought me great joy. It is 1:42 here on The Shilling Show. We're going to take a break now. We'll come back at 977-1070 with your comments about your own family Christmases, and also get some tips from David Murata on how to reduce Christmas materialism, and he has some excellent suggestions for us. The Shilling Show returns in a moment. It's 1:46 here on The Shilling Show. 977-1070 is the phone number if you have questions or comments for our guest David Murata about your own family and keeping Christmas spending under control, or a Christmas present that changed your life or the life of someone you know. We'd love to hear from you. There's a line open for you right now at 977-1070. So you had ways to reduce Christmas materialism, and there were four suggestions here. And let's start out with number one, which has to do with the gift list itself.
Yeah, I think it's okay to cut back on the list of people you give to, especially if you have a large extended family. As the family grows and grows and grows, it at one time buying for all your nieces and nephews might have been reasonable, but as you get a bigger family, it becomes unreasonable. And you need to have some rules within the family that will help contain the costs. So maybe it's everyone picks one other person's name and you do something like that. Or maybe it's, look, kids under 12 get presents and kids 12 and over don't get presents. But some way of cutting back the number of people you feel an obligation to give to. A lot of times you give presents, and had you given them the money, that's not what they would have spent it on anyway. And so there's this sort of obligation of social convention, but it's not really the way, the best use of the money within the family.
I don't know about you, but I have sometimes received gifts from people, mostly people who I don't know that well, and thought to myself, you know, I almost wish I didn't get it. I wish I don't even want it. I don't know what to do with it.
Right. Right. And so it's better if you have to give gifts to a lot of different people. I find some of the baking projects are really fun. So have a day where you bake a whole bunch of chocolate chip cookies, or you mix a bunch of spices, or you make a bunch of Russian tea or something like that. And then you've had a way of saying thank you, but you get it done all in one fell swoop. You make a lot of them, and then you've given the social present, but you've contained the costs.
And people love that. I mean, we certainly have been the beneficiary of that, of some wonderful neighbors who sometimes will come around with a little bag on Christmas morning of something they've baked. And we have done that before occasionally to bake some things for our friends and neighbors. And it's so well received, and it's so much fun to give.
Yep. It's always appreciated, because at the holiday time you need a lot of food and festive items that way.
Let's talk about the family Christmas letter. That's a big one in our house.
Yeah, you know, in our house, writing the family Christmas letter is almost just part of documenting our family history. We don't even care if anyone gets it. We just want to have it for the documentation. But sending that out via postal mail, you know, you get a whole bunch of postal mail. Sending it out via email or posting it on a website not only saves natural resources, it saves a lot in expenses as well. And then you can write it once and put it on a blog or put it somewhere else and put up more pictures, perhaps, than you could have even fit in a Christmas letter. And then you can share it with your friends. I love to hear from old friends about what they're doing. But I find if they send me an email, I click on it and view it. If they send me a piece of paper, it could be March and I still haven't read it.
You know, it's funny because I take an awful lot of time in writing the family Christmas letter. And it's a big, especially because we're so far away from friends and family being on the other side of the country. And I just assumed, because I read all these letters when they come in, that all my friends read them. And there was some really big news. I think it was maybe that we were having another kid that we sent out last year. And somebody who I know got the Christmas letter was surprised when she was born in May. It's like, oh, you didn't read my Christmas letter.
Yeah, clearly.
All right. So we touched on this a little bit, but let's elaborate. Family gifts that are already part of the budget.
Yeah, you know, I think it's good to give gifts that you would have bought anyway, but you can buy them and wrap them up for Christmas, or you can spend the time to pick them out. And that way you're buying not frivolous things entirely, but you're at least buying some things that that you would have bought anyway. And we make a distinction in our family between a gift and a present. A gift is when you give what the other person wants. A present is when you give them something you want them to have. And so you know, if we present a copy of the Constitution to the head of the People's Republic of China, that's a present, not a gift. Yeah. We want them to have that, because we think they could learn something from it. And there should be a good mix of both gifts and presents. So you need to think about not only what the person wants and maybe they've asked for, but what does the person need that would help them in their life course? And so I know another friend of mine, his mother gave him, when he was young, a pair of binoculars. And he didn't know what to do with them. So he went out and he started looking around. What do you point binoculars at? He started pointing them at birds. And in college, he ended up majoring in that. And he can identify hundreds of different birds simply by their songs. And this is his vocation and his love. And another course of his life changed through a simple Christmas present. With our kids, we've always tried to give them things that are their vocational interests. So my son is in film school. My daughter is interested in graphic design. And so last Christmas, she got a tablet so that she could begin to use the real tools that she would use if she was a graphic designer, and she would be able to do that. Those are the kinds of gifts, I think, that are a little bit different than just, oh, here's the latest Nintendo Wii or here's another video game or something like that, that isn't quite as interesting to use throughout the entire year. It's more of a diversion than it is a vocation.
When I was a kid, before I had all this gift and present distinction together in my head, I gave my dad a black light bulb for Christmas one time, and he never did figure out anything to do with it or why I gave it to him. So you do have to think about these things, but I was a kid. I had an excuse. All right, the next one is gifts that encourage talent development, and I think we kind of covered it, but you did have a nice example of The Homecoming, which is one of the movies that you really like.
Oh, I love the Christmas movie, the very first Walton's movie. At the end of the movie, the climactic scene is where John Boy opens his Christmas present from his father, and it is paper and pencils. And throughout the entire movie, he has been worried that his father wants him to be a farmer, and it's his father's way of affirming that it's okay for him to pick his own vocation and be a writer. It's a very simple gift, but it's a huge gift in terms of its significance and meaning. And I've always looked at what do I need to buy my kids? You know, if they want to be a writer, you buy them pencil and paper in the Depression. But what do I want to encourage my kids and affirm them in their interests and vocation?
We've got just about 3 minutes left, so that gives us about 30 seconds for each for the six lessons from the Reformed Scrooge. So let's go with number one.
The first one is a festive meal. I heard a reference that families eat dinner together 20% of the time. And when I heard that, I thought that's one of the things that makes the holiday special. Is that during the holiday season, if you just eat dinner together every day, it is a break from the routine and it is a different atmosphere. And it doesn't have to be a lot of money. All it has to be is the fact that everyone is sitting at the table. Perhaps you're using a little bit better china. Maybe you have a candle lit, and that makes it a festive atmosphere. And then you just take time in which you visit and talk with each other.
Giving generously.
Yeah, you know, this is a holiday season in which I think giving to charities is going to be way down. The stock market is down. Giving appreciated stock is going to be harder. People feel poorer. And I think it's a time where charities need a little extra boost and a little extra something that will help them while their giving is down. And so I think this is a season above all others in which you should increase your giving.
Be kind and gracious to those that you meet.
Yeah, I think there is a Christmas spirit, and I think it's a time in which you just pause and reflect and appreciate people a little bit more. You greet people with Merry Christmas. You greet people with a smile on your face, and you're a little bit happier. And again, if we could keep that throughout the year, it would be great. But I think Christmas is a time in which that's special.
It is a time in which it's special, and I love the Christmas feeling. How about going to church?
Yeah, that's another one that's in the Reformed Scrooge. My favorite scene from my childhood in terms of Christmas movies was Charlie Brown's Christmas, where Linus talks about the meaning of Christmas.
Yeah.
What a strange thing that Charles Schulz thought he had to put in the movie because kids didn't know what Christmas was really about. Today, it's even less so. And so I think the religious aspect of Christmas and celebration of Christmas is a great way to celebrate Christmas, and it doesn't cost a cent.
And it is, after all, where it all started. We talked about pausing and reflecting briefly, but I think it's there was this song, I think it was by Mac Davis back in the 70s, Stop and Smell the Roses. Well, maybe we could stop and smell the pine needles around Christmas time and just stop everything and get out and slow down and look around.
Yeah, there's an aspect of being in the moment, of being mindful of what's around you and just appreciating it and enjoying it.
And finally, the last one is having fun. How would we do that?
I'm a game player and I love games, and just taking the time as a family to pull out a fun game and apples to apples or some board game or something along those lines, and just enjoying laughing together really helps bond a family together.
David Marotta, thank you so much for joining us. Again, if you'd like to be in touch with Dave, it is emarotta.com. You can go to the website. That is the Marotta Wealth Management website, and be in touch with him there. We really appreciate it. We wish you a happy Thanksgiving.
Thank you. You too.